From the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., you're listening to Korean Context, news and analysis from the Korean Peninsula. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Korean Context. I'm Jenna Gibson. We have an exciting episode for you. It is the first episode that we are recording in our new podcast studio. As some of you may know, KEI moved to a new office within our same building, 1800 K Street. We're now on the third floor. So for those of you who are thinking about coming to some of our events in the future, make sure to push 3 on the elevator, not 10 anymore. But the exciting thing about this new office is we do have this new podcast studio. So hopefully we'll be able to bring you a lot of great new interviews, increase the quality of the audio and increase the quality of the podcast that you guys are going to be getting. To get to today's topic, we've had a lot of stuff going on during the summer break of our podcast, mostly to do with North Korea, but then also one of the really important things, especially for us here at the Korea Economic Institute, is dealing with trade. As some of you may know, President Trump's administration has been reviewing the CORUS, Korea-U.S. Free Trade Agreement, and has even gone so far as to suggest that we may withdraw or renegotiate that agreement. So with that in mind, I wanted to bring in some of our econ and trade experts here at KEI to talk a little bit about what's been going on and also some of the reasons why maybe withdrawing from CORUS is not the best idea. So we have first Kyle Ferrier, our Director of Academic Affairs and Research, Troy Stangarone, our Senior Director for Congressional Affairs and Trade, and Phil Escalante, who is our Executive Director. So thank you guys all for taking the time to sit down with me.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Pleasure to be here.
So to start us off, can you guys give me a little bit of an overview for those of our listeners who are not that familiar with CORUS? When did it go into effect and how has it been performing so far?
Well, to go all the way back to the beginning, back in early 2006, the United States and South Korea decided to take and negotiate a free trade agreement. South Korea had been interested in doing one for a while with the United States, but they had finally started to make some of the reforms that the U.S. needed in order to take and be able to negotiate a free trade agreement. We negotiated this agreement with a limited amount of what is referred to as Trade Promotion Authority left. They finished the agreement with about a minute or two left before the authority would have expired. All this, took place under President George W. Bush. That year, though, when they finished the agreement in, the 2007 period, and then leading into 2008, which was election year, we saw a few things happen, one of which was that, in essence, the Bush administration made a decision that they wanted to pursue in terms of ratification on Capitol Hill, the Colombia FTA before the Korea FTA. There were concerns about labor rights issues in Colombia, and the agreement ended up getting pushed back into the Obama administration because of disputes on trade on Capitol Hill, and also because, as everyone remembers, that's when the financial crisis broke. Ultimately, we had some additional talks with South Korea under the Obama administration, eventually passed the agreement, and the agreement has now been in force for a little over 5 years.
So how would you characterize how things have been going in the 5 years since it came into effect?
Overall, the agreement has performed well for both sides. U.S. exports have gone up, both goods and services. Also, Korea has benefited as well. So it is the classic example of a win-win trade agreement. Most particularly, the exports of items that were directly covered by CORUS has increased double digits. And the most famous example is beef, where it's more than doubled. Now the U.S. exports over $1 billion worth of beef to Korea.
So you mentioned the trade in goods and services. What is the distinction there? Because I know that's very important when we talk about trade to Korea.
Well, goods are both manufactured items and also agricultural products. But services is more of an intangible product, something that it's difficult to put on a container ship and ship over there. For example, like this type of communications here, a podcast, could be viewed as an export if it's picked up in Korea. But obviously, our words here are not put in a box and mailed over to Korea. So the problem in the United States is that some individuals think that the only items worth talking about is goods, merchandise goods, or manufactured products, and they often overlook the importance of services exports, which is one thing that the United States excels at.
And just to sort of highlight this issue, services are even more important. If you look at global trends, you're seeing a decrease overall in trade and manufactured goods, but an increase in services. So the international trend is actually more for trade and services than in goods.
And the services also includes Korean students studying in the United States, and that's just directly accounting for the tuition that they pay for and the admissions to the school, but not necessarily the good that they do for the local communities in the areas that they attend university in.
Yeah, and also another service export is also Korean visitors that come to the United States when they stay at a U.S. hotel, go to a U.S. restaurant. That's characterized as a service export because it extends to the hospitality industry in the United States.
One thing that the Trump administration is very focused on is the manufactured goods, the goods trade. And he really highlights the deficit that we are running with South Korea on the goods trade. Can you give us some numbers here? What type of deficit are we talking about? And what about the services? Can we just get the numbers on the table here?
So prior to Chorus, we had about a $12 billion deficit with South Korea. Last year, that deficit had grown to $27.7 billion. If you look through the first half of this year, that deficit is down 30%. But, you know, that's sort of what they're talking about.
So if the deficit has grown that much, don't they kind of have a point?
Well, you know, some things aren't as simple as they may seem on the surface. You know, it's an easy talking point to say, well, the deficit has grown, you know, by a significant amount. But here's the catch. So the Chorus FTA took and implemented tariff cuts on a range of items traded between the United States and South Korea. There are some goods, like many electronics products, which were already covered by prior agreements that were already duty-free. So in essence, Chorus, you know, doesn't really cover them. And there also is the issue of autos, to where our tariff didn't phase out until the fifth year. More than half of our trade deficit with South Korea is in autos. And as USCR Lighthizer has pointed out, actually the U.S. deficit in autos overall is almost equal to the entire trade deficit with South Korea. But the challenge here is that because the tariff didn't, as I mentioned, phase out till last year, the Chorus FTA had nothing to do with the growth in our auto deficit. What really drove that growth is, you know, as I mentioned early on, we went through the financial crisis in late 2008, 2009. The United States went through, you know, what's referred to as the Great Recession. Auto sales in 2009 fell down to about 10.5 million units sold in the United States. Last year, they peaked at 18 million units. So you've seen an increase of, you know, roughly 7.5 million more vehicles sold in the United States. You know, it's quite understandable that has, you know, overall sales picked back up, returned to a normal level, and actually passed a previous high, that, you know, South Korea would sell more autos in the United States than they did in 2011 as the market expanded. Also, interestingly to note, as I mentioned, you know, since the tariff has gone down, we've actually seen about a 2% decrease in Korean exports of autos to the United States. So it's hard to argue that Chorus is responsible for the deficit if the tariff hadn't been cut and the auto trade went up. So in essence, if we were to withdraw from Chorus, you know, we'd go back to the situation we're already in, and it wouldn't do anything to impact the auto exports to the United States. But on the flip side, the benefits which the United States has seen in South Korea on the auto side would be lost.
So as I mentioned at the top, there has been a lot of talk from the administration about whether it be a renegotiation, reopening. They've used a lot of different terms, even going to so far as to use the term withdrawal from Chorus. So what has been happening so far as the negotiations? I know they've had one meeting between the U.S. trade representative and their Korean counterparts. How did that go, and where are we as far as the negotiations?
So the Trump administration requested a special meeting of the Joint Committee, which is in part of the CORUS trade agreement. Now, after deliberations about the timing, they met over video conference over the past few weeks, and the South Koreans had presented a letter to the Trump administration beforehand, taking the opportunity to discuss the pretext for talks before actually talking about the agreement itself. From the Trump administration's reaction to the letter, as well as what has come out in the past week or so about that meeting, it seems as if it didn't go to the extent to which that the Trump administration had wanted it to go.
Well, where we're at is kind of an impasse where the Trump administration probably wanted more of a stronger commitment to start renegotiating right now, but the Koreans still want to do a study to examine what are the problems out there and if the trade deficit is really caused by the CORUS agreement. So this threat on possible withdrawal may be in part of a negotiating ploy because it would sort of solidify the minds of folks to concentrate on negotiating any changes to CORUS within the six-month time period. But other people have suggested this is could be in a larger political context because President Trump is getting lots of pressure to stay within NAFTA and negotiate something, and maybe CORUS is on the chopping block because he can't cut off NAFTA. So I think we have to also follow how the NAFTA talks are going and see if there are any implications for how CORUS will be dealt with.
You bring up NAFTA, and I think it's also a good point to mention that the difference between the NAFTA talks and the CORUS talks is that NAFTA has a formal process of renegotiation that it's going through. Whereas CORUS, the meeting of the Joint Committee, is specifically part of the CORUS agreement. Now, for NAFTA, there was a period where interest groups were able to go to Congress and voice their concerns about these issues that were being raised by the president in NAFTA and defend the agreement, whereas that really wasn't an opportunity for companies in the United States to have that opportunity to do.
Well, and one other thing to keep in mind, there's a difference. As Kyle mentioned, there's a formal negotiation process going on with NAFTA. The administration had formally notified Congress that they would do so, and that put in place certain strictures that are required under trade promotion authority. The difference here in the Joint Committee is while it was set up to discuss amendments, has the chairs and ranking members of the committees of jurisdiction in Congress reminded the administration, should they wish to take and actually renegotiate the agreement, they have to follow the procedures required under trade promotion authority. And so we haven't seen any formal notification to Congress of an intent to renegotiate the agreement.
Is that also the case with withdrawal? They have to formally notify and then Congress has to or has a role in any sort of withdrawal?
No. In terms of withdrawal, all the administration has to do is send a letter of notification to withdraw to the Korean government, and then there's a 180-day period for the withdrawal procedure.
So in the worst-case scenario, or I guess what I would call the worst-case scenario, if they did decide to notify the Koreans that they're going to withdraw, what would be the consequences and what changes would we see as far as the trade deficit?
Well, ironically, the trade deficit would balloon. Because there's a lot of products where Korea committed to lower to zero either immediately or over the course of time. And those tariffs would pop back up back to 2011 levels. And so many products have seen a great export boom from the United States to Korea because of the tariff reductions. and particularly in agricultural products, and then those markets would be much tougher for the U.S. to sell in, particularly as Korea has negotiated other free trade agreements with a host of other countries, and many of them are also other agricultural producers. I'm sure producers in Australia or other places would easily try to market their products as cheaper than Americans and then displace us. So we lose market share and our deficit would go up. And that's, you know, the International Trade Commission came out with a study last year that documented what the trade deficit would have been in 2015 if CORUS had not been in place. And so instead of a $28 billion deficit that we experienced in 2015, it would have been $44 billion. So this withdrawal does not accomplish any of President Trump's goal, which is to reduce the trade deficit between the U.S. and Korea.
And just to sort of illustrate some of how this would work. So, you know, as Phil mentioned, agriculture has done very well under this. And sort of the star on the agricultural side, if you will, has been beef exports. Last year, we exported a little over $1 billion worth of beef to South Korea. It accounts for, you know, somewhere around 17% of all U.S. beef exports in the world. So if you look at the South Korean market, right now, the United States is the market leader in terms of where South Korea imports its beef from, but it's fairly close with Australia. As Phil mentioned, Australia already has an FTA with South Korea. Their FTA was implemented a year or two after ours, so we have a slight tariff advantage on Australian beef right now, and ours would be, if we maintain the agreement, phased out before Australia's. But let's assume that, you know, tomorrow the administration decided to take and withdraw from the agreement, and we did, and there wasn't a new agreement put in place. You'd have a situation to where South Korea has a 40% tariff on beef products. Australia's right now tariff that they're paying on their beef exports is probably somewhere around 28%. So even tomorrow, there would already be probably about a 12% difference in terms of the tariff on U.S. beef as opposed to Australian beef. And that gap would only increase. So while, you know, in initial years, you might not see a big shift, over time, you'd likely see a strong shift towards purchases of Australian beef rather than U.S. beef. And if you look at this more specifically in an area like autos, you know, it's not just simply about tariffs. Under CORUS, we negotiated a series of other agreements that dealt with regulatory issues or taxation issues. And so, for example, right now, there is an exception for U.S. autos in regards to safety standards. Any U.S. producer can send up to about 25,000 vehicles per year and not have to meet South Korean safety standards, only meet U.S. safety standards. If CORUS goes away, that goes away. They no longer have that exception, and that means they have to meet South Korean safety standards. If
and each individual car would be inspected.
And another thing we did was South Korea had a taxation structure that dealt with engine displacement, so it's the size of the actual engine of the car. Most U.S. vehicles have larger engines than vehicles in other countries. The way the taxation system was set up, it basically discriminated against U.S. vehicles. South Korea would be free to take and return to that structure or one that was more discriminatory. So the cost of U.S. vehicles would likely go up. So we need to keep in mind that, you know, it's not just simply a question of what the tariff structure is, but how will the different regulatory issues that U.S. businesses were facing with South Korea and that were addressed through the FTA be negatively impacted if we were to withdraw?
To play a little bit of devil's advocate here, maybe not so much withdrawal, but are there places where there should almost be a renegotiation? Are there places where there does need to be another look at the agreement or places where it hasn't worked as well as it should?
Well, I don't think anybody would argue that there aren't ways we could probably improve the CORUS FTA. You know, one of the things that some other people have talked about and, you know, I've thought about is that, you know, if you think about the digital economy, CORUS was negotiated basically over 10 years ago now. And when you think about this, at that time, YouTube and Facebook were only about a year old. So these were not the kinds of things that the negotiators were even contemplating putting in the agreement. So digital trade is something that's not really discussed in the course of FTA. This is something we can improve. You know, the auto industry does still face some challenges, so maybe looking at some of the regulatory issues they face and seeing if there's a better way we can do this, you know, or areas we can look at. So it's not a question of whether CORUS could or couldn't be improved, because no agreement is perfect and they're all a balance of trade-offs. But, you know, the question is really, I think, sort of, why are we talking about withdrawal if this is an agreement that works for the United States, has worked for South Korea, and that to withdraw would only put us in a more difficult position than if we were to at least just keep the agreement we had?
Some of those issues you raised, particularly the digital economy issues, were something that the Trump administration is bringing over from the TPP and trying to include in NAFTA. So it's on their agenda for other areas, and it would very much help to improve the CORUS FTA. As you said, it's, you know, it may have been implemented 5 years ago, but much of it is actually 10 years ago when it was first originally the negotiations were concluded.
And the other item to watch for in the NAFTA negotiations is to see how they handle currency provisions. I mean, that's a sensitive topic in U.S.-Korea economic relations, and it might be a subject of negotiations in any renegotiation of CORUS. But the main concern is the Korean government's and Bank of Korea's transparency on its currency interventions. And if that can be handled in a more transparent fashion, I think that would go a long way to resolving any U.S. concerns about that issue.
It's a complicated issue. The actual CORUS agreement is, you know, several inches thick, so there's a lot we could talk about. But I think it's definitely something we're going to keep an eye on, and I appreciate your thoughts. I just want to give you a chance if there's anything, any closing thoughts, anything that you haven't mentioned that you think it's important for people to keep an eye on going forward. Is there anything else that you guys think we should know?
The only thing I would add is that we have to keep this whole debate in a political context here in the United States. Sometimes having all the facts and figures and statistics correct doesn't win arguments here. The United States does have a problem in a lot of distressed communities around the nation, particularly in areas of the country that President Trump won, which is also known as like flyover country, that is areas not along the coast. I think we have to be particularly sensitive to the issue of folks feeling trapped in rural communities where there was at one time a major employer, a manufacturer that's long gone. We have to be sensitive to that. But on the flip side too, we also have to encourage foreign direct investment to come into the United States. Many times these companies like Samsung and Hyundai coming into areas provide a lot of hope and opportunity. So the more that can be done to encourage economic development in a lot of small rural towns would go a long way to easing the concerns of trade and the deficit.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts. As I mentioned, this is something that we follow really closely. So definitely keep an eye out if you're interested in CORUS, if you're interested in some of these trade issues. We'll be following it. There'll be a lot on our website. It's www.keia.org, and also our blog, which is blog.keia.org. So please keep an eye out. And again, thank you guys so much for joining me here.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Happy to be here.
Thanks, everyone, for once again joining us here on Korean Context. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please feel free to subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and join us again next week for another great episode.